Well, good morning and welcome back. Wedding season is just around the corner, and maybe you or someone you know is getting married this summer. So how can you increase your chances for marital success and decrease your chance of getting divorced? Joining us to explore that very important topic is author and marriage researcher, Dr. Scott Stanley from the University of Denver. Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Good morning, Bill. I'm great.
So I'm sure there are a lot of parents listening this morning, maybe some grandparents as well, and there's a young adult in their family, and they want so much for this young person to have a happy, successful marriage. Can you tell us about some of the factors that tend to correspond with a successful, lifelong marriage?
Sure. So one of the factors that matters a fair amount is knowing the person well that you're marrying. A lot of times you'll see, and maybe this used to be a more common pattern, but it's still too common that people meet, line up, get attracted, and then, you know, within months they're getting married. It makes a lot of sense to know a person a little while before you would make such a big decision. And I usually recommend that, you know, people at least have sort of known the person through four seasons. So that would be one thing. And also marrying a little later. When we all know the couples that married at 18 and they're, you know, been married for 60 years or whatever now. Those couples are very rare. A lot of people that marry that young are going to get divorced, exceptionally high divorce rate. In fact, that's the highest risk for divorce is marrying very young. So what both of those mean is I think people need to be a little older, say, you know, 22, 23 actually is sufficient, even though most people are waiting until, you know, 29 or 30 now. But being a little older, sort of knowing yourself a little better and knowing this other person. A third factor that I think is important is lining up with the person in terms of the most important beliefs and things in your life. So what you believe, your core worldview, your faith, things that matter the most about major decisions in life, how you raise children, what you teach children, all those things. It's pretty important to, of course, line up on those things and to look for, you know, be consciously looking for somebody that fits you on those dimensions so that you just don't fall head over heels really quickly for somebody where you have none of that in common.
Can you talk about what happens in the early stages of a relationship when it comes to infatuation and what's going on with the endorphins in our brain and why it's not a good thing to make a decision quickly about marriage in the first couple of months of a relationship?
Yeah, when we first become attracted to somebody and we start, you know, hanging around them and dating, seeing them a lot, we are so chemically altered. I mean, it is not unfair to say it is sort of like we're on drugs. And, you know, most people know that feeling. I do think there's some people in life that have never had that feeling, but most people remember that. They know that. They could be listening right now and be in the midst of that. Which is it's a wonderful thing. You know, it's a wonderful feeling to have that sense of infatuation. And there's, like you say, there's all kinds of chemistry involved related to dopamine and norepinephrine and, you know, all adrenaline, you know, all the excitement and all the pleasurable kind of chemicals are there. But the fact is that also clouds our judgment, that we're not the best able to see clearly then. And I think it's pretty relevant for people to realize that if you choose somebody and you're hoping to choose for life, you choose somebody while you're in that phase, as opposed to this is another reason for, you know, getting to know the person for a while and letting things calm down a bit. While you're in that phase, you're not really able to see clearly what you're doing. And this is why sometimes you'll see, and it makes for good TV or even good movies, you'll sometimes see somebody is, you know, running headlong toward becoming attracted and going to marry somebody or in some way alter their life for somebody. And their friends or somebody in their friendship network or their family is trying to slow them down and stop them because, as long as that's a good family relationship, they know that person better, and they're not clouded by the chemistry, and they can see. So slowing down is really protective. Nothing wrong with infatuation, but slowing down is protective because otherwise that stuff's going to die down some, and you want to know, well, what are we going to have? when that dies down. Now, that's also a challenge early in marriage, which is really how you ask the question, because, you know, after so long in marriage, a lot of that has gone away. Not that we can't, you know, keep it alive and keep romance and passion alive, but some of the beneficial effects of all those chemicals that made it so easy early on are gone. That's why I love my metaphor. My dog's old now, but I have a Bichon named Odie who's somewhat world famous. I've talked about him and shown his picture all around the world, and it's a picture of him when we got him as a puppy. And I just make this point, and it's a point about commitment that I know we'll talk a fair amount about here. You fall in love with the front end of the puppy, but every puppy's got a back end. And you know, that's where the work of the relationship is. That's why commitment is so important, because you don't always just feel like it. You don't always have the chemistry just driving you with this sort of feeling of puppy love. Sometimes you just got to, you know, work with the business end of the puppy and get something done, or work on a routine. And that's where commitment really comes in to make a relationship last.
I love that, and I will not ever forget that image, Scott.
It's pretty great. It says a lot.
Now, it troubles me, I have to admit, it troubles me that so many young people will spend tens of thousands of dollars on their wedding and their reception and months of planning, but very few will invest a relatively small amount of money and a small amount of time, comparatively, in premarital counseling. What kind of research has been done on premarital counseling and how it can act as a preventive factor when it comes to divorce?
Yeah. So there is a number of good studies over the years that provide a lot of evidence for premarital counseling being effective. There's some things to quibble about, as researchers we always do. You know, this, what can you get out of this study? What can you get out of that study? But on balance, the evidence is pretty overwhelmingly clear that it's a wise thing to do. And it can help in a number of ways. One is it can help two people identify expectations. It can help them learn something about routines or how they might manage something together. It can, in the kind that we believe is particularly important to do, you can learn how to communicate better, handle conflict better. But you can also, here's a choice point for people. You can choose, as most people do, to do this, or a church that you're wanting to get married in may, you know, push it, may kind of push you toward it. But that usually happens like a month or so before you get married, a month or so before the wedding date. If you want to be smarter about it, if you can arrange to do it, if you can figure out a way to do premarital counseling like 8 or 9 months before you're going to get married, that's even better. And people won't, some people that are all in love and in that stage won't like the reason, but the reason's pretty important. The further you are from the wedding date, the less you're under the pressure and the constraints of all that's happening and all the invitations are out. And if you do it further out, you might learn something where I think for some couples you'd actually decide this isn't going to work. And you'd rather know that 9 months before a wedding date than 3 weeks before, when you're not going to cancel because of all the embarrassment and the pressure.
Oh, man, I'm so glad you said that, Scott. I'm a big advocate of pre-engagement counseling, and I believe in a longer dating relationship and a shorter engagement for that very reason. So if you've been dating somebody for 6 months and you're thinking you're going down that marriage track, before you buy the ring, before you get the invitations and you order the ice sculpture, now's the time to really dig in. And we're going to talk about one of the tools that can be used in premarital counseling up next here on the Faith Radio Network. My guest is Dr. Scott Stanley. He's an author and marital researcher from the University of Denver. We'll take a quick break and be right back here on the Faith Radio Network. Good morning and welcome back. This is the Faith Radio Network. We are talking about marriage and specifically premarital counseling with my friend, Dr. Scott Stanley. And Scott, you and your colleagues have developed a marriage preparation program. It's called PREP. You also have a new edition of an excellent book called A Lasting Promise, which couples can go through together. And I'm guessing, based on what we talked about before the break, you want to wait a little while in your relationship before you go through something like this, because you're going to be so starry-eyed in the early part of a relationship that it's not really going to be effective. So there's kind of an ideal time for couples to go through something like this.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that. This is a real challenge for couples today, for people that are looking for for people that want lasting love. They're so anxious not to choose the wrong person. They're so anxious to find the right person. And you could think these are just sort of rough time points. You and I think, are probably on the same page like this. Some people go way too long before they get married, and some people go way too short, you know, before they commit to a particular person or start to intertwine their life with a particular person. I think somebody that's serious about marriage and looking for a lasting love and a mate for life, you know, maybe 6, 9 months into dating, knowing, getting to know each other, maybe they would start working on something like that. Maybe they'd start sort of pre-talking, not even necessarily engagement yet, but sort of, is this where we're headed? And if it is, why don't we do something like this and work through this together? Which could, by the way, also be if you're involved in a church and they have a premarital counseling, you could go to the people that run that. You know, say you're well enough into this relationship that a bit of that edge is worn off. You know, everything's not just perfect. And say, could we go through this program now? Because a lot of churches don't offer what you suggested a few minutes ago, Bill. They don't offer, like, the pre-engagement counseling. But if they have a good premarital education program or service, you could ask them, could we do that before we get engaged? I think that would be really smart. And then when you get engaged, you're all set. You've worked through some stuff, and you get the wedding date set. And then you kind of know what's going on. You know more about each other. You're making a more solid commitment, and you've laid out this kind of process in a little more sensible way in terms of how you might act on what you learn.
In psychology, we call that informed consent.
Yeah, that's an extended informed consent process.
Okay.
That's right.
Now, Scott, a lot of young people today will live together before marriage, even many Christian young people. Can you explain how that can actually sabotage their chances at having a successful marriage?
Yeah, here's what people don't get, and you'll see media stories all the time about there's no more risk, or the risk is no longer associated with living together before marriage. And just to comment, we do a lot of research in that area. I can tell you when those researchers say that, they mean if you fit a certain tight set of conditions, then researchers can no longer find risk associated for you. And those conditions don't actually fit most people in terms of how they live together before marriage these days. And the real risk that people don't see, it's pretty easy to express, and people, it makes sense to people once you explain it, they just haven't heard it, is when you move in with somebody, you are about to make it harder to break up. People, nothing tells people that. It's still probably the number one belief young people have is that if we live together before marriage, it'll improve our odds. There's virtually no consistent evidence and research of that, whatever else the researchers argue about the evidence the other way. But what people just don't hear is you're going to make it harder to break up. And so what actually happens is there's a lot of couples who live together pretty early on. You know, for a lot of couples, it's kind of become more part of the dating scene. I call what a lot of people do now cohabitating rather than cohabiting, because it's really moved into the dating scene and not even the premarital scene for a lot of couples. And this is what happens, is there's a subset of people there, not everybody, but there's a subset of people in there that are going to get stuck. They're going to make it hard to break up. They're going to marry somebody they wouldn't have married had they not moved in with them. And that should scare people enough to slow people down a bit and think about, this is actually a much bigger decision as well. And wouldn't it be cleaner? Wouldn't it be more powerful just to plan to wait till marriage? Because especially if you've done the other things that you and I are talking about here today, you've already really been clarifying these other things and working on your life views and understanding each other. And then on the wedding day, that's when you move in together and make it harder to break up, because that's what you're choosing to do that day.
Now, these couples that do get involved early, move in together early on in the relationship, they end up, as you call it, sliding versus deciding. And then what does that do to their marriage later on, Scott?
I love this question. I think as you know, Bill, I think sliding is now the number one biggest sort of change in how young people do relationships before marriage over the last 40 years. People slide into having sex. People slide into living together. People slide into having children. And some people even, like I just described, sort of slide all the way into marriage because of the constraints of these other things that have built up inertia for their relationship to continue. What I think a lot about these days is imagine now the couple that's been married 10 or 15 years. It's harder. The chemistry's, you know, not easy like it used to be. Maybe there's some other challenges in life with children or work or whatever, health. So commitment really starting to matter a lot. And I think because of how predominant sliding is now, the way people do relationships before marriage, I think you can have a person now 10, 15, 40 years into marriage eventually who's not trying their best and sort of is sitting there unhappy. And if they could articulate it, what they could tell you is, I never really chose to be here. I slid all the way here. Yeah, I walked the aisle, I said the vows in front of people, etc. But I was already so much caught up in the inertia then that I think the consequence of this new paradigm shift is that people can get all the way well into marriage and get to places where it's tough and not have what you really need at that gut check time, that inner sense that, you know, I decided to do this. I committed before God. I committed with God. I committed to this person. They committed to me. We're going to make this work. I'm going to I need to invest more right now. I need to change some things. I need to change some things about me to make this work. And I'm doing that. I'm following through with what I decided I'm going to do. Now, if somebody finds them, if that sounds like somebody where they don't have that anchor, then I think today is the day. You know, choose this day. What are you about? What are you going to do? If you never made that choice before, this is a good time to make that choice, to really choose to be committed and to act on that commitment to your spouse. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Scott Stanley, we appreciate so much your time today. The new edition of the book is called A Lasting Promise for Couples Considering Marriage. And then Scott has a great book called The Power of Commitment if you've been married a while and you really want to work at improving your relationship. Thank you so much for your time, Scott, and may God continue to guide you and direct you in your work.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you very much.